Hi, I'm Ed Adams, and this is the Weekly Genealogy Toolkit, the podcast that helps new genealogists get the most out of their research time and avoid the most common pitfalls. Have you ever gotten onto Google with the intent of searching for something, but when you clicked search, you didn't find the results you were looking for? Honestly, I can't remember the last time that happened to me on Google. It's gotten so good at figuring out what you want, and I rarely have to try a different search term or phrase to find the right results. But if you've got some years on you, then you know it hasn't always been that easy. I remember in the early Wild West days of the internet, after the blossoming of the World Wide Web, there was a whole slew of search engines all vying to become the start point of the internet. Some were better than others, and most of them saw major quality variation over time, but none of them were really great. I think the first big one I remember was Yahoo. Then came InfoSeek and Lycos, and sometime later, Alta Vista came along. Then I feel like the floodgates opened up and hundreds of search engines popped up, and honestly, most of them were trash by today's standards. To get anything remotely useful out of them, you had to kind of learn how to talk to them. Now that I think about it, it was a little like trying to work with some of the current AI chatbot systems. Makes me wonder when the Google moment will be for AI. It's something that both excites and terrifies me. But back to these old search engines. They didn't understand natural language at all. So you needed to use the search engine's language. Well, unfortunately, in the world of genealogy websites, we're more or less still there. The Google moment hasn't really happened for us yet. But that doesn't mean that they're all trash, really. It just means that it takes some learning to be able to use them to their maximum effect. Today, I want to talk about adding some search skills to your tool belt, both technical and conceptual. But let's start with the technical. Many of the search functions on genealogy sites don't benefit from an algorithm helping you pull out the bits that you're looking for. They function more like the find function when you press Control F on your web browser or in Microsoft Word. They're looking for exactly what you type. Sometimes that can actually be helpful and let you search with kind of a laser beam instead of a floodlight. But sometimes you need a bit more. There are some things that you can do to help widen that aperture a bit. The first thing is search operators. The most common search operator that I feel many of you will already be familiar with are the quotation marks. Say you're on newspapers.com and you're searching for Jacob Kirkland, but you keep getting results that have a Jacob in one part of the page and a Kirkland in the other. You can use quotation marks around the name to cue the search engine to only deliver results that have the word Jacob right next to the word Kirkland. You may still get some erroneous results because it seems like Newspapers.com has a hard time realizing the contextual difference between columns, so you might have Jacob as the last word in one line of one column, and Kirkland is the first word in the same line on an adjacent column, but those are pretty rare, and most of your results are going to be for actual instances of Jacob Kirkland. There are some other great search operators, though, namely and, or, and not. I'll go over the OR operator quickly, as it's typically the default treatment for multiple words in a search query. It cues the search engine to return results that contain the first word or the second word, or both the words. Like I said, this is usually the default behavior without including the OR operator. I mention it because when you get into the more complicated searches beyond just Jacob Kirkland, it can sometimes help. An example is when I'm looking for articles with either or both of two different names. So I might put Jacob Kirkland in quotation marks, followed by the OR operator, and then followed by the name Thomas Sanders in quotation marks. Putting multiple and quoted search items in a single search can sometimes cause unpredictable results without using an operator. Sometimes the OR operator is also called by using the pipe character, which is usually right above the Enter key on your keyboard. It's the vertical line. The next operator is AND. I feel like the natural human desire is for this to be the default operator for a multi-word search. If I type in cats space dogs, I'm probably looking for results with cats and dogs. Every search engine works a little differently, but typically what you're going to get is cats or dogs. So you'll get results with both, but you'll also get a lot of noise results with either. So if I'm looking for articles specifically about one of my ancestors' businesses, I might search for Sarah Smith, in quotes, followed by the AND operator, and then the Kettle Cafe, in quotes. Now I should only get results that have both the name Sarah Smith and instances of the phrase "The Kettle Cafe" in them. This is really helpful when searching for a common name like Sarah Smith. Sometimes the AND operator is also called by using the plus symbol. A less commonly used but still helpful one is the NOT operator. Let's say, for example, that I'm searching in the Roanoke, Virginia area for my great-grandfather John Klein. But there's another John Klein that lives there, but he's usually mentioned in relation to his business or the part of Roanoke that he lives in. So you can search for John Klein in quotes, followed by the NOT operator, and then followed by Klein's Shoe Company in quotes, and followed by NOT again, and then followed by Cave Spring in quotes. This ensures that my results will not feature any cases where John Klein shows up in the same record as his company, Klein's Shoes, or his part of town, Cave Spring. You can lose some good stuff using this operator, but if you're drowning in noisy results for people that you can figure out how to isolate, this is a great way to isolate and remove them. Other useful tips to force the search system to work better for you: you can use the tilde character followed by a number to give you results within a certain number of characters of each other. So if you're looking for Marion F. Brown, you can search for Marion Brown in quotes, followed by the tilde sign and the number 2. This will show you results of Marion Brown, Marion F. Brown, and Marion F. period Brown. Wildcard symbols are also really useful when dealing with spelling oddities. The question mark character will give you a single character wildcard. So if you're searching for someone named Nicholson, but sometimes the K sound in the name is spelled with CH and sometimes with a CK, you can substitute the variable HK space in the name with the question mark, and you'll get results with either spelling. If you're dealing with an immigrant's name that is often butchered badly, you can use the asterisk symbol to wildcard out multiple characters. So if I have a Ruskovich, I can use Ruskov, asterisk, and it will find Ruskovich, Ruskovitz, Ruskovsky, and so on. While I usually use search operators on sites like newspapers.com, I'll use wildcards just about everywhere, and have used it with some real success on Ancestry, which has a pretty good search function anyway. Just keep in mind on Ancestry that if you use the Soundex feature, wildcards won't work. Soundex is an interesting feature that I've never really used, but in essence, using Soundex and wildcards would be a bit redundant. So those are some good technical tools to add to your search game, but we can add some conceptual tools as well. The first thing is to simply try various iterations of your search term. We're usually searching for names, but names are funny things. Not everyone spells them the same, and oftentimes people go by different names at different points in their lives. I've gone by Ed my entire adult life. I feel like asking someone to use more than one syllable to refer to you is a bit self-indulgent, so Ed works for me. But of course, my name is Edward. Depending on what kind of document a future genealogist might be looking for in reference to me, they might have better luck using one or the other. This happens to be a case where a wildcard could be used. But then you'd get a bunch of noise about people like Edmund, Eddie, Edwin, and so on. So perhaps search for Edward, and then search for Ed. When you're searching for records that have been digitized using optical character recognition, or OCR, rather than the more traditional indexing, like newspapers.com, keep in mind how the name might appear within the context. Should you be looking for Ted Martin, or Theodore Martin, or perhaps it's Ted F. Martin, or Ted Francis Martin, or T.F. Martin, or maybe even Francis Martin? Yes, it's a lot. But if you're not going through all the various permutations of your search target's name, then you're probably leaving stuff out. In the American South, throughout history up to today, it's very common for men to go by their middle names on everything except for legal documents. In some cases, although rare, they might have a go-by name that has nothing to do with their actual name. You generally won't know this unless you find a letter or something personal like that, but just know that Ted Francis Martin might have gone by Sam. Sometimes, when dealing with a really unusual name, usually of Eastern European or non-European background, you may not be able to use enough wildcards to cover all the possible spellings of the name. Most search engines have rules regarding wildcard use, and they may not allow more than 2 wildcards. If that's the case, make sure that you manually work out all the various possible spellings, and then come up with a strategy to search for all of them. Along those same lines, keep in mind that you may be searching for a record that's not in English, and may not even be using the Latin alphabet. If you're looking for someone who was born where a different alphabet was used, don't be afraid to add that language to your keyboard settings, switch to that keyboard layout, and search the name using those alphabets. The process of adding a language is different based on your operating system, but it's something you can easily Google. You can also find images of the keyboard layouts that you can print out and use as a reference so you don't have to hunt and peck. There are even places where you can buy transparent stickers to add to your keyboard that have another linguistic layout, so you can see both your English keyboard and another at the same time. I put the Ukrainian Cyrillic layout on mine, and it saves me loads of time. I like to try a Google search using my spelling in the target alphabet to see what comes up. If you spelled it wrong, Google will oftentimes ask you, "Did you mean?" and then provide you a suggestion. You might want to go with that spelling instead if you're not sure how it would be spelled in that target alphabet. Some websites like FamilySearch and Ancestry do a pretty good job of catching names in other alphabets even when searched for using a Latin alphabet, but most do not, and even those that do aren't perfect, so give it a shot. That's probably enough for now to get you started doing some better searching. A lot of the conceptual stuff boils down to thinking about what you want to find and what that might look like, and then searching for all those options. The more you do it, the easier it gets. I hope these tips help, and if one of these things does help you find something that you've never seen before, I would love to hear about it. As always, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter, at @thewgtpod. My DMs are open, or you can just at me so that everyone can see. I wanted to take a second to really thank you for listening. I've noticed over the last couple of weeks the podcast has seen a significant growth in listeners. I'm glad that you're here, and I hope to eventually build a community around this where we can all come together and help each other do better research. I haven't yet figured out what form it should take or the best venue for it, but if you have any ideas, I'm all ears. Until then, I'd just like to say thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Next week, I want to go over a case study. We'll talk about an adoption case from the 1850s that required a bit of traditional documentary research, and then some genetic genealogy to confirm the documentation. I hope it'll be interesting, but it'll probably be a bit longer than the usual episode. I hope you have a great week, and I'll see you then.